Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Bob Bryant. Bob is the Chief Technology Officer for Mission Canine Rescue, an animal welfare group that's dedicated to saving the lives of retired American working dogs. And he's here today to talk a little bit about the organization and what we can do to help support the organization and how these dogs can help us in our return back to civilian life. So welcome to the show, Bob. I'm glad to have you on.
Thank you, Scott. Appreciate being included in the podcast today. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first found out about Mission Canine, it really opened up my eyes to the world that these dogs, these working dogs, have to experience after their service is up, when they've kind of exceeded their useful life in their occupation, whatever it happens to be. Because I never really thought much of what happens to these dogs after the fact, but that's really what Mission Canine is all about. So would you be able to tell us about, first off, how you got involved with Mission Canine, but also what Mission Canine is all about?
All right. My involvement with the working dog world came totally by accident. I had no intentions of working with dogs. If you'd have told me 10 years ago I'd be bringing home dogs from around the world, I would have told you were patently insane. However, life has a way of doing things. My business is credit card processing. I provide merchant services primarily for e-commerce companies. And as a service and a way to give back to nonprofits, I occasionally would speak to organizations that did interesting work and say, hey, promote an offer to your followers. If they accept it, I'll pay you 50% of the residual incomes from the accounts for life. Well, this was attractive to them, is that, you know, it was money saving for their fans and it would provide them income, and they agreed to do it. This was were the predecessors of what is now Mission Canine Rescue, another organization that helped bring military working dogs home when they retired. However, the director of the organization did not understand that it was necessary to spend money to get money, just like unfortunately capitalism works in the nonprofit world as well. You have to do some advertising to people outside of your realm to gain new donors. And she was like, no, not going to spend any money. And as a result, the organization failed, and my current partners, Kristen Maurer and Louisa Kastner, were involved in this, and they reached out and they said, we don't want to stop this work. We love what we're doing. Will you help us build a new organization? And I'd been watching what was happening with them for almost a year when this happened, and I didn't even have to think about it. I said, yes. And here we are, 10 years, almost 10 years later now. It's been quite a ride. We've gained an incredible amount of good supporters and can always use more. And I'll let you direct me a little further about what I probably didn't just tell you, because I get the one-track mind sometime.
Yeah, no worries there. I want to talk a little bit more about what the role of Mission Canine is and what they're doing with these working dogs and how they're helping them in their futures after their service is up, if you want to call it that.
All right, I'll give it to you neatly wrapped and packaged. Sure. There are several types of working dogs that Mission Canine Rescue helps. Primarily, we deal with military-owned working dogs, which are called MWDs or military working dogs, or dogs that are owned by private contractors known as CWDs or contract working dogs. These dogs are trained the same, they fed the same foods, they do the same jobs, yet one's private owned, one's military owned. We also deal with TSA. We take in some of their airport dogs when they retire. We deal with law enforcement, with canines here in the United States, also in Canada. And some of the most interesting dogs that we have worked with are fruit detection dogs. These are citrus dogs that run in orchards and they detect citrus disease. It's kind of interesting. One citrus tree that's diseased can kill an entire orchard. So these dogs more than pay for themselves. Other dogs we work with aid in demining in places like North Africa to keep kids from getting their limbs blown off by mines that people with not good sense left. They're also cluster munitions. Those are the dogs that we work with primarily, Belgian Malinois, German Shepherds, some Labrador Retrievers, some German Short-Haired Pointers. Also a few Springer Spaniels. Those dogs are primarily used by TSA, the Springers and the German Short-Haired Pointers, because they're not as scary.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I could see how, you know, kids going through an airport or, you know, certain people going through the airport would be a little turned off by that when you have that quote unquote scary looking dog coming up to you and sniffing your luggage and stuff.
You get checked out by JAWS. Generally, a military working dog can have up to 5 handlers in the dog's career. When it's time to retire, which retirement in working dogs, unfortunately, is not determined by age. It's determined by their ability to do their job. And once performance starts to decline, then the dog is considered excess and the dog is dispositioned as retired at that point. And that could be at 7 years old. And I've seen a dog as old as 13 years old that was retired from the military that lived less than 6 months. Afterwards, what a retirement. I wish, in other words, I'm wishing in one hand and hopefully not doing anything in the other. I wish they would retire them at a set age, like 8 years old, where they'd have some time to just be pets. When a dog is retired, normally the handler that is with the dog at that time has the option to adopt their dog. And many people ask us, well, wouldn't someone that's a service member just automatically take their dog? And the answer is no. And the reason is because they may still be going to do another deployment. They could have a small child at home and perhaps they have a bike trained patrol dog that's toy crazy, that would be aggressive. In that situation, then the dog would be offered to the first handler, the second handler, and so on. And in most cases, whoever gets the pup, normally the other handlers that were able to handle him or her would have the opportunity, if they ever wanted to stop by and visit, give the dog a scratch on the ear, what have you. It's pretty good. Contract working dogs generally don't have designated handlers. So when they come back, they don't always have a reunion. And we take care of those dogs and we find them the best adoptive home possibly. Are possible to support their particular needs.
It, you know, before I started doing some digging into Mission Canine and what you guys actually do, I sort of just assumed that there was some sort of plan in place for these dogs after their, you know, quote unquote retirement, after their time in service is up, where there was a place that they go to, that they know where they go, but that doesn't seem to be the case, right?
No, with military dogs, government-owned dogs, they're not. A military dog is never going to be dumped by the government. A military dog is never going to be euthanized anymore by the government unless that dog has a terminal illness and is in pain. And in that case, I wish people had that option. And that's a total other story. But contract working dogs don't always have that luxury. We've seen contract working dogs dumped in kennels overseas. There were 23 dogs that we rescued out of a kennel in Chester, Virginia. I think it was back in 2016. These were Army dogs that were called TED dogs. That's tactical explosive detection dogs. They were quickly trained by a contract company in North Carolina, and then deployed to aid in some of the IED removal when all the troop withdrawal was going on from Iraq back in the day. And these dogs were brought there and basically just left. And 33 dogs. I think we paid the guy nearly $23,000 in vet bill, in a kennel bill, just to get the dogs out. A lot of the contract dogs come back unhealthy. We got a dog back one time that should have weighed 70 pounds. He weighed 35. And this dog was the star mine detection dog in Afghanistan. And his handler was killed. When his handler was killed, the dog was stuffed away and forgotten. It was really sad, but although the dog had some mental issues for life, we got him looking at his prime again. Was real happy to see him looking good after such a horrible experience.
Yeah, and you know, given the high intensity jobs that some of these dogs have, just like their human handlers and the people who go to some of these combat environments or even on patrol as a police officer or something like that, these dogs probably, like you mentioned with this last dog, probably have some anxiety, some stress that comes up through their time in their service. What kind of rehabilitation or training and things like that is necessary to help them go from that working dog environment to becoming a pet?
Okay, good question. First of all, in regard to how long rehab takes, it just depends on the dog. And yes, definitely we get dogs in that have PTSD of varying forms, especially explosive detection dogs and other dogs that have been around gunfire. Fireworks normally send them reeling. We don't have too many that have bite issues related to PTSD. Mostly it's just fearfulness or it's resource guarding. And what we do when a dog comes into our facility, I'll just kind of give you from A to Z. The dog is initially left to decompress. You know, obviously gets attention, stimulation, what have you. But we let the dog basically chill out for a couple of days, especially if it's come from overseas, because its night is our day, you know, vice versa. And we want them to calm down a little bit. After that, we will do a veterinary assessment, or we'll determine what they need. You know, what didn't the military or the contract company tell us when, you know, they surrendered the dog to our care? We will make appointments to get the dog vetted. And this is whatever the dog needs. We have a dog that came in from Turkey. He needs, he's got a bilateral perineal hernia. You talk about painful, you know, that's either side, and $5,000, but the dog earned his keep and he deserves the surgery. Some dogs with PTSD, with resource guarding issues, or that can be unpredictable and kind of, when I use the term go up leash, I mean that they will run up leash to bite the person that's holding it. Normally we don't run into situations like that. Should we run into a dog like that, that dog would only be adoptable to someone with experience with working dogs, with canines that have had that kind of training, or large breed dogs in general that can handle a dog that can be a little bit unpredictable. And with the base we have, we generally can find a loving home. The biggest problem that we have with people adopting our dogs is these dogs, for the most part, I would say that 50% of them are friendly to other dogs, half of them are not. Maybe 15% like cats. The rest of them would like cats for lunch. So we have a lot of loving adopters that want to adopt another dog in their family, but maybe they've got four dogs already. And most of the time that doesn't work. So we're looking for people not only that can afford the cost of care, because the senior dogs, obviously it costs more money to provide them the veterinary care they need, but we want someone that isn't full with animals, that can afford to dedicate the time that a working dog requires. Most people have no idea the amount of energy these dogs had. And you're right in the first place where you said that most people don't know that these dogs have no golden parachute, no landing in place when they're released from the military. You know, they're going to a handler most of the time, but a contract dog, we pull contract dogs out of shelters all the time, because people just, they get them and then they realize that this dog is going to eat my house if I don't, you know, take it for a walk twice a day, and they take it to the shelter and dump it.
Wow. Yeah, and that's unfortunate too, because these dogs are highly trained. They've experienced some things that a lot of their new owners potentially probably never even would dream to experience in their lives, as far as some of the environments that they've worked in, the high stress and the that type of thing. But I also think about the dogs who are trained for certain jobs, that becomes their purpose. Like a lot of times they really enjoy doing that good job. Dogs like to please their handlers, their owners, whoever. And when they do a good job, that's like a fulfilling thing probably to them, where they feel like, okay, I've done this the right way, and this is a good thing. But then when they come out of service, now they're not doing that job. I wonder if it's one of those things where it's like, okay, now what's that next purpose, right?
Okay. Let me address that for a minute. First of all, we encourage people to keep their skills up, to keep them sharp. One of my working dogs, Oreo, a big black lab, he's passed on a few years now. Oreo was a bomb dog. I'd hide bullets. I'd hide firecrackers. Anything to give stimulation. And he learned to smell out lacrosse balls, little rubber balls that the kids play with. He found over 170 buried balls out here. That was his delight. We'd take him to the park, let him hunt. Now I have a retired police canine from a small city in Canada that was retired early due to a little medical issue that he had with a leg tendon. Doesn't affect anything at all now. He is a drug dog. And he's a bike trained drug dog. And I took him because I was able to handle that level of training and him not be a risk to the public or a risk to himself. And to this day, he's unhappy if he's not in the car when I go somewhere, because he's a cop. He expects to be in the car, even though he sleeps the entire time. You know, most dogs have their head and their tongue hanging out the window. Not this guy. The minute he's in the car, he's down for the count until you need him. And then he's up. He searches every place I go for drugs, and he finds them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he finds weed in parks all the time for me, vapes, you name it. I just laugh. He found a crack pipe taped under a drawer in a hotel room up in Colorado one time. And the management and I had an interesting conversation about that. Seems the staff was doing a little partying on cleanup time.
Oh, wow.
In this room. But no, we encourage people. For instance, one of our dogs, a military working dog named Icar, who recently passed, on his handler, former handler, taught him how to find shed antlers. That's big business up where they were in Idaho. He would find elk antler sheds. And that was his, and he continued to work. No, we don't want them. We will not, though, allow a dog to continue to be worked in any capacity for any type of commercial or private interest where the dog is expected to perform. Also, working dogs of the nature that we take in, these contract dogs and military dogs, they are not suitable for service or emotional support. Animals are not trained for it and cannot be certified as such.
Okay.
If you need a dog, and a lot of people do need a dog for PTSD, get a young dog that's trained for that. A lot of these dogs have PTSD, and they're just going to make it worse.
Right. And I was going to ask about that too, if that was like maybe a second act for them, if they could do something like that. But that doesn't seem like, it probably wouldn't even make sense to entertain that idea because of, you know, some of the things that these dogs have experienced. And mm-hmm. and you're right. I think starting with a younger dog who's kind of fresh and didn't have that baggage coming along with them, it's probably the better way to go with that.
There's nothing that says that dog cannot wear a vest proclaiming his or her service and where he or she worked and have people think, how cool is that dog? Can I pet your dog? But don't try to call an emotional support dog and get on the plane with it. Just don't.
Right. Right. And especially for those dogs that maybe don't get along very well with other animals and things like that. You never know if someone else on the plane is going to have another animal, you know, with them, their own emotional support animal or something that probably just wouldn't work out too well.
No, it would probably wouldn't end well. We'll hope that doesn't happen. No, I tell you what, on our dogs, Southwest Airlines has been very gracious in giving our dogs a bulkhead seat on flights home. There we go. Let's spit it out. But we would never take a dog on a plane that was a risk to the public. It's just, that's not something we'd do.
So you mentioned before a bit about the process of getting these dogs into their new homes in terms of if you have a former handler who's willing to take them, then there is that situation's kind of taken care of. But what about in a situation where, like you mentioned earlier, maybe the handler has passed away or can't take the dog for one reason or another, like they have small kids at home or something. What happens then? Who's eligible? Who do you look for? Like what the ideal candidate is in terms of the type of person that would be able to take on one of these dogs?
Okay. First of all, the most important criteria is the adopter must be able to afford the cost of needed veterinary care. If you can't afford to take the dog to the vet, don't apply to adopt. Too many dogs we just don't have the money. You know, if you're not willing to spend the money to provide the dog a good diet, please don't adopt. Don't go buy Old Roy at Kmart and think we're going to be okay with it. It's not going to happen. Don't have a house full of pets. Be willing and excited about the opportunity to spend time with the working dog that you want to adopt, to stimulate the dog you want to adopt, to provide the dog with activities, with lots of walks, with outdoor time. Don't adopt a dog and leave it in the backyard. That's not acceptable. We expect these dogs to be, and a lot of people will make fun and say, the dog is not your fur child. You know, you get people that consider them children. I don't consider them children. I do consider them family, and I don't make families. Well, I don't know. A couple of my members of my family, I might make stay in the backyard, but the dog will stay inside for sure. That's basically what we're looking for. And also we want someone that has the room. Now we always get it. Well, I have an apartment. Am I disqualified from adopting the dog? No, you're not disqualified, but you better have plenty of outside time to go do that dog somewhere. And that may or may not involve a dog park, depending on the nature of the dog. We don't want somebody that works 10, 12 hours a day, or the dog is going to be home alone 8 hours a day. Probably, I would say our average adopter is around 45 to 50 years old, married with maybe one other dog, two other dogs max. Some of them have cats, some don't. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned before too about the continuing to work with the dog, as far as, like you mentioned, the, you know, finding the bullets and the fireworks and even some drugs and things like that. I know the handlers, when they're actually working with them in their service, they have some specialized training to teach the people, the handlers, how to handle the dog so that they can effectively do that type of job. Is there any sort of training like that? Maybe not quite as intense as the actual handlers are, but is there anything like that for the people who end up adopting these dogs so that they can continue to help them work through that?
Yes, we will give them whatever language the dog was trained in, and we will provide them the commands in that language. Most dogs understand a lot more than you think they do. If I tell my canine to lay down, he'll lay down. However, he was also trained in French and German. So if I say coucher, he lays down. You need to know the dog's signals. You can tell when a dog is alerting on something by the way the dog will act. If someone is really interested in doing scent work with their dog when they adopt them, it's not necessary that the dog continue to get training in whatever he or she was trained in. It's important that he or she be stimulated in whatever way and played with to where the dog has an enjoyable time. For instance, teach the dog to find tennis balls. My canine delights when I take him. He goes in the back of tennis courts in the woods. He comes out with two or three every time. In fact, I will unveil his ball finds for the last 2 years soon. I expect there to be close to 400.
Oh, wow.
He's something else.
But, yeah, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah, we'll help them. If anything they want to know about, we'll help them know. For instance, if I want him to come to me, do this. He comes. If I want him to come by my side, push down. He comes right there. Or I use the word Fuss. Same thing. F-U-S-S, German word.
Yes. Yeah. And that's good that there's that, that type of training is available for these new owners that adopt them, because, it may be one of those things where they don't really know some of these commands or some of the things that the dog might be capable of even doing.
Oh, unless they've adopted some of them. We have adopters that have now adopted three dogs from us, because unfortunately, we don't have a long time with the dogs we adopt. I was lucky to get 5 years with one, 4 years with another, 6 months with one. You never know, but you just make the best of it.
Yeah, exactly. And these dogs, like you said, they're not necessarily children, but they're part of the family. So you do have that connection, and you do want to continue that. Maybe not right away, like the next day, go out and get another one of these dogs. But you do want to continue that in your life and have that in your family. I know our family a couple of years ago lost our dog that we had for almost 12 years, the dog was around for the entirety of my children's lives up until that point. And so it was a big loss to our family. And so now, just recently we got, new dogs in the house, and now it feels like the family is back again, it feels like a full house again. And so it's important. And I think, with this continued supply of dogs that are coming in from the contractors and the military and the police departments, there's definitely going to be that need. So I'd love to help people understand how they can get involved with Mission Canine and everything that you guys are doing, so that they can help support you in whatever way that they can, if they're interested. What are you looking for in terms of volunteers or donations? I know it's got to be expensive to probably rescue some of these dogs from, especially from overseas, but right. even locally, it's probably pretty expensive as well.
I'll touch on finances at the end of this, but let's talk about volunteer opportunities. As far as hands-on work with dogs, there's not a lot of opportunity unless you have experience with large breeds and dominant dogs. Just because the potential with a new dog to get bitten is there. I'd say it's a 25% chance, because you don't know the dog. The dog doesn't know you. If you've only worked with little Fufu, then you could be in trouble. However, we have work days at our ranch. Our ranch is in Magnolia, Texas, which is just north of Houston. We have about 60 dogs in our care now, too many, and we need some more good adopters. Even though we've got over 1,000 applications, we need more qualified adopters to come and take these dogs and work with them to where we can intake more. We have work days at the ranch from time to time. Soon we're going to be putting in some noise deadening shrubs. We've already in the process of putting in a large fence. And even though we're in an unincorporated area with no restrictions, we don't want to be that neighbor that has all these barking dogs. And the only time our dogs really bark is when either somebody new comes on the property or it's feeding time. And then it's a cacophony of sound from all of them. Volunteers can do that. We have volunteers that we call chief thank you officers that call some of our donors when they give and say how much they appreciate the fact that they've given and that we, are thankful for them. I have other people that help do Facebook fundraisers for us that like to receive our little, we have little coins, kind of like a challenge coin. If you're in the service, you understand what that is. Anybody that does a Facebook fundraiser for us, even if it raises $5, we send them a challenge coin. Obviously, the nature, this is going to be related to finance. I'm going to start talking about the almighty, or maybe not so mighty, dollar now that inflation has hit us at 8%. And we accept cryptocurrency too. I'm really not kidding. We do, and people give it to us. We do close to $2 million a year in donation income. However, that supports the work we do currently. With more funding, we could expand and do twice the work we need to, and that's what we need to do. My job in this organization, if I have a job, quote unquote, I'm a co-founder, but I'm the guy that does all the development. I'm the one that's responsible for getting kennel tax paid, for ranch managers paid, for transports paid, for making sure that I can raise the $27,000 needed to get some mine detection dogs out of Bosnia. You know, there's all the nature of a nonprofit is to have its hand stuck out, but there's a big buyer beware with that stuck out hand of a nonprofit. Here's how you tell the good ones from the bad ones. And this is for you, and this is for your viewers as well. Charity Navigator, charitynavigator.com is a good place to check out nonprofits. Now, I will say that it takes several years before you're even listed on Charity Navigator. And we just got listed last year, and we have a very favorable rating there. There are some other charity rating sites, which are basically worthless because anybody that answers the questions right can get a stellar rating. And there's something inherently wrong with that. But what you should ask anybody before you give them money is, if I give you a dollar, how much gets to the work? Our answer is 88 cents. I use 12 cents out of your dollar to advertise and gain another 88 cents for the work. So we try to be frugal with money. And by the way, this is a female-run organization. My partners kill it. They work 80 hours plus a week. They sleep in their cars. Nobody sits on leather chairs. Nobody flies first class. I don't take a salary. I have my own company, and I have the luxury of time to do this, and it's my pleasure to do so. We do have some basically decently paid people at our ranch to take care of our dogs. And for donors out there that expect everybody to do everything for free, nonprofit doesn't mean don't get paid. There has to be income for a nonprofit, or we would not be able to do the amount of work that we've done in the, you know, without any payment. Maybe we could have brought 300 dogs home in 10 years. We brought home over 1,200. We've reunited 540 plus with former handlers. We walk the walk, and we do what's right for the donors, and we try to be very transparent. I'm going to shut up now.
No, that is good. I'm glad that you mentioned all of that, especially Charity Navigator, because oftentimes we hear about these nonprofits that are doing certain things with the military community, and you know, it may sound like they have a great mission, may sound like they are doing great things, but at the end of the day, how do you really know where that dollar is going to? You know, what percentage of it is actually going to the purpose of the organization versus things like salaries and advertising and other things like that?
Ask them too for their tax form. If you want to donate to a nonprofit and you want to see what they're doing, ask them for a copy of their Form 990. And if they say, what's a Form 990, or they give you pushback, run. That is right. The 990 is what the IRS is reported to with. And it's how you tell the sheep from the goats.
Yep, exactly. And those forms lay out everything. And I, as a former accountant, I used to prepare those for certain nonprofits. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But those forms lay out all of the expenses that the organization has, and it shows you where money is going to. And so that way you can tell exactly what it's going to and how it's being used in the organization. You know, travel expenses, things like that, like you're talking about, no one flies first class. Well, you can probably tell pretty easily, you know, how many people are flying or going first class or all that kind of stuff. And if that's where your money is going to, then maybe that's not the organization that you want to be supporting, right?
I'll check on my transport crew when I see a $50 bill from a restaurant, say, how many, where was it, what was it for? I don't expect them to eat peanut butter sandwiches, but don't go to the steakhouse, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, you're not going on these trips for, you know, luxury purposes. It's not a vacation. Right. You're going out there to support the mission, and that's, I think, what's important. Now, as far as people, so you mentioned you're in Texas in the Houston area. What about people who are in other parts of the country? How do the dogs get to those other people who might be able to take these dogs? And what does that handoff look like?
All right. In most cases, almost all of our adopters want to come and visit the ranch. And we've had people drive from Seattle to get a dog. And we have a couple that drives from Utah frequently, and they'll get a dog. If we need to, we will transport a dog there, and our transporters will make sure, that the dog is a fit. You know, we're not going to leave the dog if it's not a fit, but no, we will take a dog to an adopter. Now, we do, our adoption fee is very low. It's $300. It doesn't even cover the cost of the neuter or the spay if we have to do it to a dog. By the way, any adopters thinking you're going to do any breeding, you won't be doing any breeding with our dogs. They're all spayed and neutered. Don't ask. Don't think about it. Let's don't put any more unwanted pets in the world. If we have to transport a dog cross country for somebody, normally we would ask them to help, you know, cover the fuel cost and that to get the dog to them. But they don't even have to do that if we know the dog's going to have a great life. It's just each situation is different when it comes to long distance transport. We have four dogs that are going out this week all over the East Coast, and we got one guy taking them all.
Oh, wow. That's great. And those dogs, I would imagine, and I don't know for sure, but I would imagine they've probably spent some time with each other at your ranch. And
they're crated. Okay. When we transport dogs, they're crated in the trucks. We will break them. We break them individually. Again, we're going to know before we put the dogs in what their nature is. But we still try to, you know, practice some safety on the road to where we don't have any dogs get loose or get any fights.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, no, that makes sense too. Well, I mean, that sounds like pretty comprehensive from the rescuing the animals from wherever they happen to be. Like you said, they could be all over the world, and you guys are still working to get them and reunite them either with their former handlers or getting them in a home that's going to be able to take care of them. But the whole process from, you know, all the rehabilitation that they might need, and then to finding the right homes, the applications that you have to comb through, I'm sure that's a lot of work as well, to just comb through those applications.
We have someone specifically that does the applications and the interview process. That's a full-time job.
Yeah, and I'm sure their BS meter has probably gone off a few times where they're able to tell the ones who really are able to handle these dogs versus the ones who just say they can because they want to get a dog that for one reason or another.
It's pretty easy, and we've been lucky so far that all our placements have been very good.
Good. That's encouraging to hear too, because you don't want to end up seeing these dogs being turned over to the kennels or anything like that.
Are you interested in knowing what it costs to get dogs home from various places?
I am, actually. As I was talking about this and getting these dogs back in, it occurred to me that I know just a regular plane ticket going to some of these places is probably expensive, but then getting there, getting the dogs, bring them back and everything, that's probably fairly expensive, I would imagine.
Normally, when we get dogs out of the Middle East, specifically Kuwait, and these dogs either have come from Iraq, Iran, we're not sure. A lot of the Kuwaiti dogs work their ports for explosive detection. We fly there with a group, normally four people, and then each person can fly back with up to two dogs as an escort. The dogs fly cargo. So we've got the cost of the human ticket, but the dogs fly for less. It's about $1,900 a dog flown as cargo, if they are escorted. Now, let's move that over to Afghanistan. That number goes up to $4,500 if you can get the dog out. From Afghanistan today, There's still some contract dogs there. We desperately like to get them out. There's still some people there. I hope they get out. Dogs there would have to fly to New Delhi, and then, you know, from there, fly to somewhere in Eastern Europe where they could stay at, not Eastern Europe, but just Europe, to where they could wait out the rabies ban period and then come into the United States at that point. With Afghanistan, at least $3,000. Go over to Japan or Guam. We bring dogs home from there a lot. Now, thankfully, the military has started cooperating a little bit and putting dogs that were about to retire for us on rotator flights. So, you know, they'll come into, I'm actually the member of the team. I'm out on the West Coast. We have a big, base out here. I live in Thousand Oaks, California. It's still the relatively sane part of California that hasn't gone off the rails politically. And I'll just leave it at that. I'm a nice, semi-conservative, leave me alone, stay out of my business kind of guy, and we'll get along just fine. But whole rest of the state's kind of a looney tune at some point. But the Marines flew some dogs down to Coronado Naval Air Station for us a few months ago, brought us six dogs there. But other than that, a dog getting out of Japan, $6,000 a pop. Coming from Guam, close to $7,000, because the logistics are just a freaking nightmare to get them home. But we have help from the military now. That's something they weren't doing until recently. You know, we get calls from corporals that needed a dog back from Afghanistan. You know, they don't have $3,000, but they want their dog home. But we've got great donors that will stand up, and we can have those funds in 24 hours if we need them.
Well, and that's great too, because like you said, like that corporal on a corporal salary is not going to be being able to shell out that kind of money. They'd probably love to if they had the money, but you know, it would be a stretch for someone in that financial situation. And I know during the Afghanistan withdrawal a few months ago, there were some pictures that were going around of dogs that were crated up, and you know, it just is heartbreaking to see that these dogs are just being kind of left behind and
makes me sick.
Almost just forgotten, right? I mean, they're not being taken care of the way they should be, and you know, we should be doing more to get them home and get them into homes that will be able to take care of them. And
I still have a business visa for India that's valid until September if we were to have the opportunity to get any dogs out of there. So, you know, I don't know. Afghanistan's gone back to the Stone Age, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, that would be hard, especially at this point. You know, hopefully some of them can make it out, but you know, it's all up in the air right now. So, anyways, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today. I really enjoyed this conversation and learning more about Mission Canine and everything that you guys do. Where can people go to find out more about Mission Canine and help support its mission?
All right. We post most of our active things on Facebook. We're simply Mission K9 on Facebook. Also on Instagram, some there. Same thing on Twitter. And our website is missionk9rescue.org. And excellent. Any of those you can donate at, you can ask us a question. We appreciate support in all forms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will have links to all of those, your social media, your website, and everything in the show notes. So anyone who is interested in getting involved or helping out in any way that they can, please go check out the show notes, click through those links, and do what you can to help support Mission Canine. And I'll even have a link to the Charity Navigator site as well. So, you know, like you mentioned, check that out for any of the nonprofits that you're looking to help out and support. But you know, I'll even have the link to Charity Navigator for Mission Canine specifically, so that way you can check that out and see you know, how they're rated and how they are using the funds that they are getting from donations, and that way you can feel confident knowing that your donations are going to the right cause. Well, again, thank you, Bob. I'm glad to have you on and share this this organization with the listeners. Hopefully, some people will be able to reach out and help out, and also help out with adopting some of these dogs if they're able to.
Scott, you're awesome. Thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.